So we're reading from the Nectar of Devotion, which is a summary study of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada. From the chapter, and the number is chapter number 10, Techniques of Hearing and Remembering. Meditation. To meditate means to engage the mind in thinking of the form of the Lord, the qualities of the Lord, the activities of the Lord, and the service of the Lord. Meditation does not mean anything impersonal or void. According to Vedic literature, meditation is always on the form of Vishnu. In the Srimad Purana, there is a statement about meditation on the form of the Lord. It is said there, meditation focusing on the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead has been accepted as transcendental and beyond the experience of material pain and pleasure. By such meditation, even one who is grossly miscreant can be delivered from the sinful reactions of his life. These words of Srila Prabhupada are soothing to the soul. They are in a world which is so much agitated by the modes of ignorance and passion. This simple and nice statement that real meditation is meditation on the Supreme Lord and only that meditation on the form of Vishnu is what can save us from material pain and pleasure. As is quoted from the Nisringa Purana, that is simple and profound and very nice. It reminds me of a conversation that Prabhupada had with some students in Australia who were who were saying that they wanted to meditate. And Prabhupada said, meditate, meditate. What will you meditate on? Right? First you have to know what to meditate on. Then you can meditate. So that is a fact. That unless we meditate on Krishna, we cannot truly speak of meditation because there is actually no real absorption. Right? Only meditation on Krishna is all-absorbing. Today I was reading a definition of the word Bhagavan. We are aware that generally Bhagavan refers to that person who is full of six opulences. Aishvaryasya, Samagrasya, Viryasya, Yasasasya, Jnana Vairagyuschaiva, Sanam Bhagam Itingana. Which means that Krishna has all these six opulences, all wealth, all beauty, all fame, all strength, all knowledge, and all renunciation. In full, Sada Isvarya Purna. So, but Jiva Goswami gave another definition of Bhagavan, and that definition was, let me just see it, remember it, that Bhajaniya, Bhajaniya Guna, Bhajaniya Guna Vishista, which meant that Krishna has the quality that he can attract everyone's service. Right? Somehow or other, when one becomes confronted with Krishna, then one becomes attracted to do some service. And we see these things, like yesterday when Gauranga Premananda drove with the van, he had to go on the sidewalk and there was someone who pushed a little. And without him, you would have not gotten on the sidewalk, little did you know. And Thakur was commenting, oh, he did devotional service, and it is true. In that way, people do devotional service. Yesterday we saw so much spontaneous devotional service. People that dance spontaneous, people that smiled, had clapped, so many ways. So that is because the holy name, being none different from Krishna, has that same power that it can actually attract everyone to service. In the Vishnu Dharma, there is a statement about meditation on the transcendental qualities of the Lord. It is said, persons who are constantly engaged in Krishna consciousness and who remember the transcendental qualities of the Lord become free from all reactions to sinful activities, and after being so cleansed, they become fit to enter into the kingdom of God. So devotees, they need to take the time to meditate on the Supreme Lord. That is why in the morning when we are chanting, we are meant to be chanting in very peaceful circumstances, so that we can really meditate on Krishna. This chanting is meant to be that. It is meant to be a deep meditation on Krishna, which works very purifying and cools down the agitation that comes about because of the modes of material nature. Only the Paramahansa is so full of Krishna consciousness that it is not possible for the for his consciousness to become disturbed. Apuryamanam achala pratistam apa pravishanti yadvat. Apa samudra pravishanti yadvat. It is said, just as rivers are flowing into the sea and cannot really disturb the water of the sea, in the same way, the agitation of the material nature flowing into the mind of the pure devotee cannot really affect it. Because the sea is filled, and in the same way, the mind of the pure devotee is filled with thoughts of Krishna and remembrance of Krishna. So this meditation on Krishna is, with time, becoming more and more important. We must deeply meditate on Krishna, and we must do all our activities in meditation on Krishna. Right? And if we do so, then they become meaningful. Then they become very wonderful. If we simply do the service for Krishna, being conscious of the service itself, then it's different than if we do the service meditating on Krishna. One example is given about Ruchi, which is manifesting itself in two stages, and the example is given about Kirtan. It said, this is an example of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and he says that if Kirtan, in the early stages, right, we of Ruchi, we become very much into the mood of relishing the Kirtan. We really get into it. But providing it's musically a nice arrangement. If someone sings horrible, or if the beat is not right, or whatever, if it's musically wrong, then we become disturbed. But in the more advanced stage of Ruchi, even if the singing is horrible, musically speaking, even if everything is wrong, one still appreciates the chanting, because it's the chanting of the holy name. So in this way, when the meditation becomes the main object, then the form doesn't bother us anymore. So this is the essence, that whatever we do, we must develop this meditation. The meditation on Krishna is the essence of our in our spiritual life. That's where we find peace. Like today, you could say the day after a storm, that Queen's Day is such a day that you're out there in the middle of an volcano, right? It is wild, it is just madness everywhere, and we put in so much energy to somehow or other counteract or to give mercy on that occasion. And in the course of it, we stretch our limits. That's the idea. We're stretching our limits to somehow or other do it and reach a lot of people like that. But at the same time, after that, we should return to the spirit of meditation and after we have made a great endeavor, then we should always take the time to recharge the batteries, which means to meditate on Krishna. Charged batteries means that our meditation on Krishna is there. And when the batteries are empty, it means our meditation on Krishna is breaking. It means that we are doing the service, but we are not meditating on Krishna. And we're just busy with the service, which in itself is good. But as it is mentioned that as we surrender to Krishna, our capacity to remember Krishna is increasing. And then our capacity for service is increasing. So with time, our meditation is increasing and we begin to understand that the essence of Krishna consciousness is meditation. And we see that like Prabhupada had a constant meditation on Krishna. And that was the wonderful quality. Right? And the meditation on Krishna was so strong that whenever he was reading, he was driving in the car, saw a neon sign and he saw Chintamani. Right? Chintamani. It didn't say Chintamani, but Prabhupada was reading Chintamani. We may also remember that Prabhupada saw an advertisement of a paint company that was showing how a pot was turned upside down and the paint was falling on the earth and the whole planet was getting a different color in the picture like that. And underneath it said, we changed the face of the globe of the earth. And Prabhupada said, that's us. When he saw that, he said, that's us. And in this way, his meditation on Krishna was perfect because it was 24 hours. So we must come to this point. When we are preoccupied with the service, then naturally we'll experience that we are working with the material energy. And the result is that the material energy is always going to these ups and downs of sukh and dukh, the ever-changing duality of nice, inspiring moments and irritating moments, agitating moments. That is the nature of the material energy. So while we are engaged in devotional service, that is equally so. Right? That nature doesn't change. We're still working with the material nature in the service of Krishna. And it's still the same old struggle. The rose still has thorns, right? In this way, the material energy is like that. Everything is always interchanging, sometimes inspiring, sometimes very austere. But if the meditation is on Krishna, then the experience is much different than when the meditation is on the activity itself. Because when our consciousness is absorbed in the activity, then we are not peaceful. But when we are, then we get agitated at the ups and downs. But when our mind is absorbed in Krishna, then amongst those ups and downs, we can never be disturbed. Then we are transcendental. When there are any questions, we can just ask questions on the way today instead of at the end. So anybody a question, just go for it. Yes. That is true, so the question is that he has heard many times that this meditation was not present in Arjuna and that he was rather fighting on the battlefield, etc. That is true, but the battle of Kurukshetra lasted only 18 days. Right? So Arjuna was like in that consciousness for 18 days, But there were definitely other times when Arjuna was meditating on Krishna. For example, when Arjuna came back from Dwarka and Krishna had left the planet, he could only meditate on Krishna. And he was just thinking about Krishna in total. He was in total shock and distress that Krishna had left. And, you know, and then he's in a total state of meditation. Yeah, it's one and the same. Yes and no. Still, if the devotee sees Krishna right behind the service, then it's equally good. But thinking of the service of Krishna will automatically bring us to the form of Krishna. So one should also meditate directly on the form of Krishna, because there it is very soothing to our nature. If we are actually thinking of the wonderful form of Krishna directly, that form is so satisfying. We need that satisfaction. It's like we need to relish also. Yeah? We need to relish the lotus eyes, the lotus feet, and the pinkish lotus hands, and the lotus navel of the Lord. We need to relish all that. We need that sense of well-being. It is natural. Just like it says, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, janmanishware bhavatat bhakti rahite kitvai, that I'm not interested in going back to God at just birth after birth, I'll stay in this material world. But it also says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada explains, he says, but still, nonetheless, Krishna still takes the devotee back to Godhead, because in his heart of hearts, he has a desire to see Krishna face to face. That's natural. And it's just natural that it's satisfying to the soul to see Krishna. So we should, in our movement, take some time also for just remembering Krishna. You know, it's very nice to come in the temple when it's quiet, right? And instead of just running in and out and paying obeisances, because that's what you're supposed to do in the temple, to just sit down in front of the deities and to actually look at the deities, you know? Not because, we're just here and because it's darshan time. No, but just to sit and peacefully sit in front of the deities. That's very valuable. Those kind of activities. I mean, they are sustaining us. So we should... we're not beyond that. We cannot always battle on the battlefield of Amsterdam. Yeah, that's not going to work. If we are totally transcendental, yes, then it doesn't matter. But still we'll be attracted. Don't forget that Prabhupada at night was writing his purports. And that he was saying, when he's asked meditating, yes, these are my meditations, these are my ecstasies. Prabhupada had a deep meditation on Krishna at night through the pages of Bhagavatam. Amanusmara Yujacha. Amanusmara Yujacha. No, I mean, I'm sure he did, but Prabhupada did mention that point when in the construction work in Vrindavan, the devotees were complaining that they had never had any time to think of Krishna. Then Prabhupada made that statement. Do you think that Arjuna was thinking of Krishna? Right? Arjuna was thinking of fighting, but he did it for Krishna. So all along, Prabhupada also says, just like a boy who's very much in love with one girl and he's thinking of buying a particular ring for her, which is very expensive, and he works the whole week to get the money. And the whole week he's just working for the money for that ring. So in that way he's thinking of her all along. He's doing it all for her. Right? So devotee in this way thinks of Krishna and is doing it all for Krishna. And that is perfect. So Arjuna certainly was remembering Krishna like that. My point was not that we cannot remember Krishna while being engaged like that, but my point is that there is also the side of simply engaging in peaceful hearing and chanting and directly remembering Krishna. And that is very sustaining and important. In the past, you know, we thought that was secondary, right? That was Bhajan Anandi almost, you know. The Ghosti Anandi is always preaching, always, right? But Prabhupada had his moments, right, at night especially, of deep meditation. And so, which is bhajan, you know, it is service, but in deep remembrance and meditation on Krishna. So that's the point I'm stressing, that there's a need for that, and that we should do.
Can one more time I explain, because yesterday I asked about that Bhagavan Rai in the lecture said that chanting is when you chant Hare, you remember Radha, and when you chant Krishna, you remember Krishna.
Mm.
In another lecture, we heard so many times that you just meditate on the sound.
Yeah. So, the sound vibration itself is transcendental. So the remembrance that takes place through the chanting is not taking place on the level of the mind, but the remembrance is actually awaking the dormant soul. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadhya Kabunai Sravanadi Sudachitta Karya Udai. Sravanadi Sudha Chitta. It means that by hearing and chanting, the heart, right, is touched, and then we are being awakened. Yeah? Sravanadi Sudha Chitta. The heart becomes purified and we become awakened. Udai, right? Awakened. So the dormant soul, which the soul becomes dormant when the living entity begins to focus on the on his own desires. Then, that dormant soul is again touched by the hearing of the holy name. So on the platform of the dormant soul, the remembrance begins to take place. And then the remembrance is clearly that Hare remembers us of Radharani in the service mood that she has to Krishna. When we remember Srimati Radharani, we are always remembering her in connection to the service mood that she has to Krishna, the extraordinary service mood, and she is like the emblem of the service attitude. So chanting Hare, therefore, sometimes is also translated as, please engage me in your devotional service, right? Which Prabhupada also gave as a translation. Right? And then Krishna, obviously, the object, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, etc., who can attract everyone. So you have to see it like that. It's not remembering on the platform of the mind, but it's actually but whatever remembrance happens on the platform of the soul, it also reflects on the mind. So the mind also gets purified by hearing and chanting. And if we do a lot of hearing and chanting, our mind also begins to remember Krishna. But that's not the actual remembering. It happens on a deeper level. The soul gets awoken, right? And begins to remember. And therefore, at one stage, the hearing and or remembering, at one stage, the remembering of Krishna is no longer here in the mental sphere, in the head, but it's right there in the heart. It's just like, we already have some sense like that. I sometimes give that example of Carl Jung was interviewed and asked if he thought that, does God exist? And Jung, he said, no. So do you believe that God exists? And he said, no. I don't believe that God exists. And everyone says, And then he waited 10 seconds and he said, I know that God exists. Right? Which means, like, you know, there was something from the heart, you know, some knowing, right? So we have that sense of knowing sometimes, knowing something deep in your heart. So that relates more to the platform of the soul than to the platform of the mind. So that way we can get an idea of how it will be, right? I'm not saying that that's exactly it, but it gives an idea of what's happening when we start knowing from the platform of the soul. And remembering. In the Padma Purana, there's a statement about remembering the activities of the Lord. A person who is always engaged in meditation on the sweet pastimes and wonderful activities of the Lord surely becomes freed from all material contamination. Right. So, yeah, the other day, we were like... saying just like, you know, in washing powder, you have the active ingredients, you know, the enzymes and whatever it is that cleanses out the dirt, right? So in the same way, that's the purifying agent, the cleansing agent, and you could write all these things on the package, right? The cleansing agent, the purifying agent. So the only real cleansing agent is Krishna. Right? It is Krishna. Anything, so wherever there is Krishna, there is purity. And where there is no Krishna, there is impurity. I was sitting on the airport and in Madrid, and there was a man, he was dressed in a very nice suit. You know, and he had like black suit, you know, with a nice crease in the pants, etc., you know, like, and he was sitting next to his wife, and somehow or other, there was something on his pants, you know. So then, he started to clean it off with spit, you know, licking his fingers all the time, and he's just cleaning, you know, he's cleaning his whole pants by licking his fingers like that, and he's thinking, my God, look at this. He's just totally contaminated his whole pants, right? Just to look nice, and he looks nice. You look at him, you know, he's like, wow, you know, so slick, so clean, right? You know, but he put saliva all over his clothes, right? So from our books, they would be ready to, you know, totally contaminated and unwearable practically, right? Time to change dress, you know. Huh? Yeah, something, you know. I mean, at least from our point of view, he just contaminated his cloth. I almost felt like going up to him and say, like, what are you doing? I mean, I just really had to hold myself back, you know. So it's like, like, you know, like, it's mushy. It's like, how can you smear all this saliva all over your pants, you know, to clean them? I mean, I was trying to think, well, not in a vicious way, but I thought, maybe if I tell him, he'll suddenly understand, you know, what he's doing, right? I really see he doesn't understand what he's doing. He's just thinking, oh, I need some water to clean, but I don't have water, no problem. Like up my tongue, it's water. It's not water. I could have biologically explained it to him. It's full of germs, you know. I was thinking in my mind of how to justify the whole thing to him. Anyway, I decided not to do it. But... it is like that, people don't know. So we sometimes also may think that we get purified. Like, for example, someone may sit with his arms upwards in some yoga asana, and he may feel that it helps me a lot. I'm getting peace of mind from this. You know, I'm becoming like very calm and, yes, I'm making advancement like that. But this is all illusory. Eh? This is all illusory. Manoratena sati davato bahi. Right? That no matter what we achieve in the material world in terms of shifting from the lower modes to goodness, it's never good enough to be free from the manorat, from the chariot of the mind, which will drag us away again. And all that goodness will again be lost, right? So the only way we can actually attain purity, real purity, is by associating with Krishna. So this is very nice. So it is, therefore, by always being engaged in meditation on the pastimes, the wonderful activities of the Lord, one surely becomes freed from all material contamination. It is not that Srila Prabhupada gave us the Krishna book, right, so that we would never read it, because we're always busy with service, you know, with like moving brooms and moving papers and moving books and moving pots and pans and incense and bells, etc., which of course is more direct, incense and bells. But he also gave us Krishna book, to directly read the Krishna book, to directly read about Krishna. And if we do so, we feel very purified. It's very nice. It's like, it's soothing. It's calming us. It's like, I have these original dictaphone recordings that Prabhupada did for the Krishna book, right? So you hear Prabhupada speaking in things like, well, he speaks in the whole chapter. And it's not a lecture. He speaks it in on quite, it's not as lively as a lecture in the sense, you know, that he's, there's no drama in the speaking. He's just on a straight tone, giving the translation. It's very peaceful, right? And it's nice, you know, just to hear Krishna book. It's very nice. It's just, I was listening again and again the other day to the chapter number 48, which is called Pleasing His Devotees, and how Krishna is going to meet Kubja in Mathura, when he comes to Mathura, and that Kubja, of course, was a society girl, although she was a hunchback also, but that when she saw Krishna, that she had this sandalwood paste which she'd made for Kamsa and then gave to Krishna. That was in an earlier chapter, but anyway, I'm just telling you that also for remembrance. And in this chapter, Pleasing the Devotees, Krishna has now come to fulfill his promise, which he earlier gave, to come and visit Kubja. And it said that in Kubja's house, when everything was, since she was a society girl, everything was arranged to agitate the man, the minds of men. There were pictures of naked people on the walls, and lots of drapes and seats and cushions and nice fragrance. It was like a really an atmosphere to incite lust. But Krishna did not become lusty. It was Kubja who was very lusty. And Prabhupada says, so the lustiness of the lady is generally concentrating in the breasts, right? So he said her breasts were burning, and but somehow or other she became attracted by the lotus feet of Krishna, and therefore she placed these lotus feet on her breast, and immediately it cooled down all the lust, right? So described. So we hear such kind of descriptions. After that, Krishna went to Akrura, right? He went to the house of Akrura. And in this way, we hear these descriptions in the Krishna book, which are very transcendental, about the direct activities of Krishna. And this is very nice. This kind of meditation is beyond the trouble and strife. It is very nice if we spend time with this. In our movement, you know, oftentimes when we meet other devotees, we speak about ISKCON. The topic of the discussion is ISKCON. You meet someone, you haven't seen him for a long time. What's going on in ISKCON, right? The big world of ISKCON, and what should be going on in ISKCON, what should not be going on in ISKCON, what could be going on in ISKCON, what we would like to be going on in ISKCON, and things like that. And oftentimes, so many times amongst Vaishnavas, we discuss this topic. And certainly, it's not that it's not transcendental. It is transcendental, but it's not always soothing to the heart. But if we speak directly, sometimes it's even agitating to the heart and to the head also. Sometimes it gives us a headache. But if we hear directly about Krishna, actually that is very soothing. So Madhagopal, questions can be asked anytime, whenever you're ready. Just go for it. Don't hold back. At least indirectly. So you have to somehow or other give it a twist so that it fits. In some of the Puranas, the evidence is given that if someone is simply meditating on devotional activities, he has achieved the desired result and has seen face to face the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this connection, there is a story in the Brahmavaivarta Purana that in the city of Pratisthanapura in South India, there once was a Brahmana who was not very well to do, but who was nevertheless satisfied in himself, thinking that it was because of his past misdeeds and by the desire of Krishna that he did not get sufficient money and opulence. So he was not at all sorry for his poor material condition, and he used to live very peacefully. He was very open-hearted, and sometimes he went to hear some lectures delivered by great realized souls. At one such meeting, while he was very faithfully hearing about Vaishnava activities, he was informed that these activities can be performed even by meditation. In other words, if a person is unable to actually perform Vaishnava activities physically, he can meditate upon the Vaishnava activity and thereby require all of the same results. Because the Brahmana was not very well to do financially, he decided that he would simply meditate on grand royal devotional activities, and he began this business thus. Right? So we know which story is coming, I guess. Huh? Yes. So, yes, this is possible to worship the Lord in meditation, and if it is done with full devotion, then it is accepted by the Lord. There are many examples. This Brahmana was cooking the sweet rice and wanted to offer it cool because sweet rice is the best when it's cool, and was wanting to test if it had cooled down and touch it with his finger in the mind and then burned his finger. And this is certainly certainly possible. The story here goes much further, I think, before he finally burns his finger. Yeah, it's on the next page. He does elaborate deity worship in the mind. Of course, we do not have the order of the spiritual master to do everything in the mind. The spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, wants practical results, right? It's not that we can just in our mind meditate on delivering the whole universe. Prabhupada wants us to actually do it, right? But for ourselves, we can meditate in the mind, and this can be very helpful. It is, for example, also stated that in Bhagavad Gita, that if we cannot follow the regulative principles, then we should work for Krishna. If we cannot work for Krishna, then we should meditate on Krishna. Right? Because the circumstances are sometimes like that. Like there was a young girl and she was living with her parents. What could she do? She was a young girl and she was a devotee and she wanted to serve Krishna, but the parents wouldn't allow it. Right? They were so much against it, so there was no question that she could do it. Right? Not even in her room. They were so heavy. They were always checking, you know, and even if there was a little incense stick somewhere.
Give that smelly stuff here. We don't want that in our house, these strange foreign smells. All right.
And so, but the girl could simply meditate, right? She could simply meditate and in that way get the mercy of Krishna. So one is never cut off from serving Krishna. This is the amazing thing. Even if we cannot chant, right? Because our environment doesn't allow us to chant, we are not cut off from serving Krishna because we can meditate on Krishna. And that nobody can take away. Nobody. Right? That's still in there, in the mind. We can meditate on Krishna. Yes. So, meditation on Krishna is our saving grace. If we do meditate on Krishna, then we are associating with the Supreme Pure, and the that purity will emanate through our heart, and it will give us new life. When we were drying up, and when we were feeling tired and affected by the beating of the material energy and struggling, then that gave us new life, new taste. So it is so essential. And actually the chanting is of course the best form of meditation, and that's what we're supposed to be doing in the morning, to deeply meditate on Krishna. Yes, you can also chant in the mind. In the Hari Bhakti Vilas, it is described that chanting can be done in three ways. Either in the mind, either by moving the lips, but not really producing much sound, right? Or it can be done by speaking loudly. And in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, it is said that the highest quality of chanting is the chanting in the mind. Right? So that's sometimes bewildering, but one should understand that if we just produce the sound and the mind is not involved, then that's not good. Right? We know that. That we call mechanic chanting. So that's why it's said the chanting in the mind is higher than the chanting of producing the sound. But if both the mind and the sound are involved, then it's the same, right? In that sense, then there's no difference in terms of result. However, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was chanting loud, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ordered us to chant loud, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was chanting very loud and explaining that by this loud chanting, he was delivering all the conditioned souls. There is also a testimony from a neighbor of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, an elder gentleman who lived in Mayapur. There is a testimony that Bhaktivinoda Thakur would chant very loud, so loud that the neighbors were like, you know, they were also chanting when he was chanting, they mentioned. So, like that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was chanting loud, and the Vaishnavas in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are meant to chant loud to deliver the conditioned souls. But we make it a point that we should also engage the mind in the chanting, not just produce the sound. The mind must be very much involved in the chanting. So, but these three types of japa are there, described in Hari Bhakti Vilas. Yes. Well, yeah, I think that it is a fact. Tanama charitari, or what is it? Tantan rupa nama charitari? Nama rupa charitari, right? Nama rupa charitati. So it is explained like that. From the name, everything will come. Right? We will by chanting the name, we will also begin to see the form in due course of time and all the characteristics and pastimes of Krishna. So, is there a need to separately cultivate meditation on the holy name, on the form of the Lord? Why not just chant Hare Krishna and just let it all happen, right? And when it happens naturally, it happens. Yes, that is true, but on the other hand, we see that the Acharyas have given us also the Pancharatriki, or the worship of the deity, right? Which is very much the meditation on the form of the Lord. And also Srimad Bhagavatam. We see that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not just stress the chanting of Hare Krishna, but chanted five different aspects of devotional service. And he said, if any of these is performed, one can very quickly, even a little bit, he said, one can very quickly attain love of God. And these included, yes, the chanting of the holy name. These include the hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, residing in a holy place like Vrindavan and Mathura. It includes the worship of the deity, and it includes in being in the association of devotees. So Srimad Bhagavatam, as we know, is very much describing Krishna. All the first nine chapters are the introduction, you know, the introductory chapters of actually describing Krishna directly, so that we can see Krishna in the proper perspective. The very purpose of the first nine chapters is so that a direct description of Krishna can be given and understood properly. That is the idea. And the 11th and the 12th chapter are there to make sure that in case we didn't, after reading all the first nine chapters and the 10th chapter, in case we still didn't understand Krishna properly, that afterwards it's still straightened out so that we will understand Krishna properly. So, it's not a contradiction or contradictory or to meditate on Krishna. I'm not speaking that we should be like all day meditating on Krishna. We have a duty. See, the first principle is that we should know that we've received the mercy of Krishna and of the pure devotees. And because of that mercy, we've become indebted. And just like it is said in the scripture, that whatever you do, we become indebted. We are indebted to the demigods for breathing air. We're indebted to the sun god for sunlight. We are indebted to the cows for the milk. We are indebted in so many ways. Right? For everything we consume, we have a debt to pay. So, but now we are indebted to Krishna and the spiritual master. When one is serving Krishna, one is freed from all other debts, but one still has the debt to Krishna and the Guru. So first of all, we have a debt. So as a debt, that means that we have to pay that back by service. That is a debt. We have to pay by service. So first of all, every day we have to pay by service. So we are not free to just do everything and anything we want in Krishna consciousness. No, we must every day spend time to pay back our service. That's our dues for what we got. So therefore, after we have done our duty, our prescribed duty, right? Then, if there's time left, then we should always use that time to do some direct meditation on Krishna. Either within the mind, or by sitting in front of the deity, chanting Hare Krishna, or by reading Krishna book, or, you know, but something direct about Krishna, not just about talking, not that we just, after a whole day working hard for Krishna, that we come home and that we start like talking about what we've done the whole day, or that we do what the karmis do, you know, look for a way to relax, you know, a game of table tennis, you know, just to play a game of table tennis just to kind of like, whew, unwind a bit, you know, after slaving a whole day for Krishna, slugging it out, you know, beating your head against the wall for Krishna the whole day. Boy, was it a day and a half for Krishna. Let's play a Krishna conscious game of table tennis, you know. Okay, one for Krishna, okay? I'm on Krishna's side and you're on the demon's side. One for the devas, one for the demons, right? One, you know, like that, you know, you can make it Krishna conscious, right?
I cannot see any picture in my mind, I see only darkness.
But I didn't say you had to see the picture in your mind, did I? I think you can. You must also see, when you... We cannot see pictures in our mind, no problem. We read about. Hearing is more important. So the ear is more important than the eye. So we hear. That meditation comes through the ear. And as we read, then we see at the same time, when we read about lotus eyes. Are you seeing lotus eyes now? Lotus eyes, lotus feet, lotus navel. Nama Patmana Nabaya, Nama Patmana Maline, Nama Patmana Netraya, Nama Pangra Jangaye. As Kunti Devi said, if you read that verse, that she's offering obeisance to Krishna's lotus navel, his lotus garland, his lotus eyes, and his lotus feet, then I see a lotus garland right in front of my eyes. In Vrindavan, we offer to the deities these big lotus garlands, you know, so immediately I'm picturing it, see these lotus garlands, huh? This beautiful painting of Yamuna Devi, and she is standing like that with this big lotus garland. Classical painting. You remember it? But then you take the Krishna art book and you go looking at the pictures while you're meditating, and then in the future you have some pictures in your mind. If you keep on looking at the Krishna art book every day or on your computer, You just scroll all the pictures, you know, in a slideshow. If you do a slideshow, I'll give you some. I have a 1,000 bitmap files of Krishna for you, on a CD. You know, we'll burn you a copy, and you can look at it and just look. Yeah, we'll ask Edwin to burn a copy for you, and you can look at it at night. You know, you let it just, huh?
Maybe some proper movies.
Movies. Anyway, that's called bootlegging. That's bootlegging.
Meditating on Krishna, sitting before the deity and reading is also meditating on Krishna.
Yes.
How to develop some patience to do that?
Practice. By at least beginning to understand the importance. The first step is to understand we should do it. When you sit in front of the deity, you chant Hare Krishna at the same time. Right? But it's like, you know, we have to come to this point where we tell ourselves, slow down, sit down now, relax. Just take some time to sit in front of Krishna. Yeah? Just do that now. It's very nice. And if you start doing it, you'll see that it will be nice.
Did they really receive Kripa Siddhi just for free?
For free. Free bonus. No, they get for real, but still you always feel indebted after you get, right? We feel indebted. Kripa Siddhi means that by the mercy of Krishna or Guru, we are uplifted just without doing anything to a much higher level, right, in Krishna consciousness, and ultimately even taken back to Godhead like that. Now, afterwards, one naturally feels so indebted, right? That one wants to pay back the debt, right? And one feels that sense of being indebted. So being indebted is a very natural feeling whenever some love is given, right? We experience it also in this world, you know? If somebody in a very loving way goes out of his way for us, right? And he really takes a lot of trouble for us, we can never forget it. And we always feel a debt, and you know, and later if that person needs our help, will help him, you know, spontaneously. We want to help him, right? We feel indebted to this person, and we don't think, I have a debt to him, you know, like I have to pay, and now I have to help him. No, we want to, because he lovingly helped us so much in the past. Right? So that's only material. So what to speak on the spiritual platform? The sense of feeling grateful for what one receives is so great that one wants to just always do whatever you can for that person. And that's how it worked with Prabhupada, right? That the disciples at one point in the final days said to Prabhupada, you're driving us mad with love. You're driving us mad. Right? And Prabhupada did. He gave so much mercy and so much kindness and was teaching and was just, you know, like bringing his disciples, his intimate disciples, to higher levels of Krishna consciousness. And they said, you're driving us mad with love. And he did. And therefore, that sense of how could they ever forget Prabhupada? So in the same way, if we get Kripa Siddha, that's such a great thing. The wonderful love of Krishna, that we'll naturally want to pay him back again and again. But it's for free. No charge, no bill, no charge. Okay. Yes, they did, but there is causeless mercy. There is causeless mercy. Yeah. There is causeless mercy. It's not always that in previous life there was something. Sometimes it's really just causeless mercy. The son of Maharaj Prataparuda, it wasn't on his own strength that he got that mercy, but somehow or other, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not want to meet Maharaj Prataparuda because he was a king, although he was a devotee. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't want to meet him. But finally, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu agreed to meet the son. And he embraced the son. And the son became overwhelmed with love of God. And then the son went back to the father. And in that mood, the son just came with tears in his eyes and with a smile and effulgent totally in love of God. And he walked up to his father, and when his father saw that his son had been transformed like that, his father was so happy that he spontaneously walked up to his son and he embraced, and the son embraced the father, and suddenly the father also felt the love of God coming into him. In this way, the son carried the mercy from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Maharaj Prataparuda, who didn't get it directly. And somehow or other, that son, for being in between, got it. Kripa Siddha. He got it. And it's not mentioned that he got it from because of some previous pious activity. No, he just got it. He got it. So there's definitely, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just gave it to certain people without them deserving. Patita Pavana Gaura Hari. Right? No doubt. He just gave it to them. Without any prior credit.
Then, of course, one more thing. Why not me? That's unfair.
Why not me? Yeah, but you know, nothing is unfair. As when we tend to think about fair and unfair because of our own childish nature, right? Children, they think like that, fair and unfair, you know. But actually, as we are maturing in Krishna consciousness, we begin to realize that everything is fair. And the thing is this, is that Krishna cannot resist devotional service. That is a fact. Right? So therefore, we do not need to worry, fair and unfair. Krishna cannot resist devotional service, so we have it in our own hands. Through devotional service, one can attract Krishna. That is the meaning of the word Hare. Harati, it can steal away Krishna, can attract Krishna. Madan Mahan Mohini, Srimati Radharani, can even attract the attractor of all, Krishna. So those who follow in the footsteps of her and serve Krishna can attract Krishna. Krishna cannot resist. So we can bring Krishna, we can control Krishna by devotional service. That is the amazing power of devotional service. I missed the beginning. Is that what?
Is that so that only in Lord Chaitanya, Krishna is present, then it's possible to get that
No, because the Lord can do anything and everything, whatever He wants. It is a fact that when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was personally present, that He did amazing things. That He made the animals in Jarikanda, right? The tigers and the deers, suddenly He made them chant Hare Krishna. That was clearly Kripa Siddha, right? Ordinarily, tigers and deers don't do that. And they started to embrace each other and kiss each other and dance around and chant the holy name. It was certainly Kripa Siddha. And that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu turned whole villages around and made them Krishna conscious immediately. And that people from one village would come and join the Sankirtan party and get love of God just by being in the Sankirtan party with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they would go back to their village and the whole village would transform into total ecstatic love of God. Where do we see this kind of events, right? We're here in the temple in an ocean of love and God, and anybody who walks in, when he goes back home, his whole house turns into devotees, right? Ecstatic. We don't see that happen right now, but it could happen. Huh? How? Anything can happen. There's no limit to Lord Chaitanya. It can happen. But why is it not happening? That's the question. The question is not how. The question is, why is it not happening? Because if everything would go like that, with a tap on the head and total transformation, then where would be the surrender of the spirit soul involved, right? Then it would be Krishna who makes us all Krishna conscious. Whereas Krishna wants us to voluntary surrender. Therefore, what he does, he leaves instructions and he gives us the choice to actually decide for ourselves if we want to do it. And he offers us a process for purification so that we can voluntarily choose to make that surrender, so that we can voluntarily choose to love Krishna or not, to serve him or not. Not that Krishna is going to touch us with his hypnotizing touch and suddenly we're all devotees and we have to serve. No, we can... We must desire it on our own. Yeah, but no, it would not even be more easy. It would not be our doing, it would be his doing. And he wants it to be our doing. If I hypnotize you, and I make you, if I would be a super good hypnotizer, and I would hypnotize you, maybe I could make you do things which you ordinarily wouldn't do. Right? I would make you pick the pocket of Gyananasan and bring the cash to me. Right? And you would do it, right? Maybe the wrong pocket, maybe I should choose another pocket, but whatever. He always says he doesn't have money. That's why I think he has money, because he must be saving it. Right? Someone who always says he doesn't have money doesn't spend any, right? So he must be saving it. So by now he must have quite a bit. Huh? Anyway, if I would hypnotize you, right, to pick his pocket, if I would be a good hypnotizer, look at my watch, you know. Right? Then maybe I could get you to do that. Right? So, but later on, if you get caught, you know, you would say, no, but I was hypnotized, I was forced, it wasn't me, I didn't do that actually, it was actually someone who worked through me. So if Krishna, just by some mystic influence, changes us, our hearts around, then it's really Krishna who's doing it, not us who are doing it. Right? So then, that's not the same as us voluntarily surrendering. Krishna wants our voluntary surrender. But sometimes there's one case, all right then, whoop, take you back. No, no, of course not. Ask Krishna. You go to Krishna. When you go back to Godhead, you can ask Krishna about that. Okay, so then you have found the answer yourself already. Then you don't have to ask him that question anymore. You have already answered it. Okay, next question. No more question. One last question. When I'm talking about hypnotizing, if I hypnotize him, then it's me who's overpowering his mind and make him do something that he wouldn't want to do, but by my powerful hypnotizing, I can make him do things that he doesn't want to do. So if Krishna, if we suddenly through Kripa Siddha develop love of God like that, then it's Krishna who brings it out to us. It's not by our own doing, right? We have not done anything to deserve it. So in that case, right, it's Krishna who is the active agent, yeah, who gives the love of God. Whereas otherwise, we are the one who is surrendering, right, voluntarily, and then attracting the mercy of Krishna. So Krishna wants to see that voluntary surrender. He wants to see some active part of ourselves instead of that he is the only active player, which is the Kripa Siddha idea. Right? We're in a passive state, but he is active and gives it anyway. You see?